Setlist, the music business podcast from CMU. This week, just how eco-friendly is Coldplay's world tour? Welcome to Setlist, the music business podcast from CMU. I'm Andy Malt. With me is Chris Cook. Hello, Chris.
Hello, Andy.
As ever, we're going to take a look back at some of the biggest and most interesting music industry news stories of the last week. A week when UK Culture Secretary Lucy Fraser reassured MPs on Parliament's Culture Select Committee that the recently announced government-led working group on music maker remuneration will be effective and set out to deliver solutions and not just become a talking shop.
So, bad news for fans of talking shops. There will be no talking shops.
Yeah.
There will only be...
They won't talk at all.
It'll all be done in
mime. No talking, just solutions.
Everyone can write things on post-it notes. That might work. Of course, this relates to something that happened. We had another brief break in Setlist publication. Andy was off gallivanting, so we didn't record an edition.
I was not.
I was in Athens. I was having a great time. And while I was in Athens...
I was right here.
All of
waiting.
This... got announced. So this is part of the ongoing economics of music streaming work led by the UK government, all of which was kickstarted by the inquiry into music streaming by the Select Committee in Parliament. And so there have been lots of strands to this work. We've talked about it quite a lot on the podcast. But the latest development that was announced right at the end of last month is that a new working group is being convened to progress with the work around the economics of streaming. There have already been working groups focused on things like data and transparency, but the music maker organisations here in the UK, so the Musicians Union, the Peter Doris Coalition, the Ivors Academy of Songwriters and Composers, the Music Producers Guild, the Music Managers Forum, have made it very clear in recent months that they want a separate working group to specifically focus on the issue of music maker remuneration. So that's how artists and songwriters share in any money that their songs and recordings generate. And that has now been convened. But in this update hearing, it was a general hearing of the Culture Select Committee where Lucy Fraser, as the Culture Secretary, has to answer the questions of the MPs. And one of the concerns that was raised was that maybe, I don't know, maybe, this is what one of the MPs said, this isn't me, maybe some people within the music industry might try to bring so many issues to that remuneration working group. I mean, everyone's obsessed by AI still, aren't they? I thought if we took a week off, people would stop talking about artificial intelligence, but everyone's still banging on relentlessly about AI. So maybe certain people in the music industry will try and get AI on the agenda. I don't know. This was a theory presented within the Culture Select Committee and as a result, distract everybody from the issues that organisations like the MU and the FAC and the Ivors want to be discussed. But Lucy Fraser, Culture Secretary, insisted that will not happen. It's all about action, she said. So that was one little development that happened this week. Relating to the ongoing economics of music streaming.
Yeah, they're going to get results.
Results aplenty are going to be coming. We've had it promised by a minister of the UK government, and no minister of the UK government would ever make promises on which they're not going to deliver. So, as a result, we're anticipating in a few months' time, there will be set list after set list after set list where we're reporting on and talking about all of these achievements. So we thought that we wouldn't spend too much of this edition of Set List talking about these latest developments, even though there have been quite a few. But I'm pretty sure that Andy Malt is going to put a link in the podcast notes to where you can get all of our coverage on all of the economics of streaming conversations, including this story. So you can go and read those on the website, which means we do not have to talk about this story in any great detail on this edition of Setlist.
Great stuff, because there is a lot to say about that, and there will be a lot to say about it in the future. So let's maybe save it up until they've got some actual results.
Or alternatively, the whole thing falls apart and there are no results to talk about, but there's lots of angry people that we can quote. One of those things is going to happen, but it's not going to happen today.
No, so let's just press on with this week's edition of Setlist. Later on, we'll be discussing Apple's new Vision Pro headset. But first, Coldplay have provided an update on their work to reduce the environmental impact of their touring activity. As you probably remember, back in 2021, the band said that they were introducing an assortment of measures with the aim of ensuring that their current Music of the Spheres tour produced 50% fewer carbon emissions compared to their last global tour in 2016 and 2017. They provided an update on those efforts earlier this month with data on the first 12 months of the tour pulled together by Professor John E. Fernandez of the MIT Environmental Solutions Initiative.
And while we may or may not trust commitments made by Culture Secretary Lucy Fraser, hey, when Professor John E. Fernandez makes statements about Coldplay's tours, we're going to believe it. So let's have a look at what has been said in this report, this update on Coldplay's bid to make their tour super eco-friendly. They said in an update on their website, on a show-by-show comparison, the Music of the Spheres tour has so far produced 47% less carbon emissions than our last stadium tour. Now, as Andy Malt has just said, the aim was 50%, and they've got 47. So
a massive failure.
Massive failure. Nowhere near.
Why bother?
Who cares about those 47 percentage points? It's those final three. That's what it's all about. No, okay, let's acknowledge that that is still quite an achievement. And as they say in their statement, this is a good start and something that our incredible crew should be very proud of. I actually know somebody who's been working on all of this, so maybe I shouldn't be too sarcastic. Well done to that person in particular. But Coldplay slightly share our feeling that 47 is not good enough, because they then said there is clearly still room for improvement. And now that they're on the second year of this tour, they wanted everyone to know, they have started to run the entire show. That's audio, it's lights, it's lasers. Do they really need the lasers? Would that not be one way of, you know, is it because Chris Martin's so boring when he's on stage? If you don't have lasers, everyone would fall asleep. I don't know.
Hey,
I'm not knocking Coldplay.
If you want to talk about unnecessary things, we'll get to that. You carry on.
They said the entire show, audio, lights, lasers, are now run from an electric battery system that allows us to use 100% renewable energy as efficiently as possible. Not only that, we have been using electric vehicles and alternative fuels whenever we can, as well as reducing waste and plastic usage to the absolute minimum. Thank you, the band said, to all the brilliant people, especially the brilliant person I know, and creative minds who have helped us with all of this so far.
Brilliant people and creative minds. Sounds like they've just got some brains in a jar. I guess that's one way of reducing your emissions.
It's true.
If you get rid of the rest of the body. Anyway, as well as all those brilliant people and creative minds on their team, Coldplay's fans have also been encouraged to play their part in reducing the carbon impact of the tour. And noting that, the band statement continued, "You have helped charge the show batteries on the power bikes and kinetic dance floors, travelled to shows by foot, bicycle or public transport, used the recycling bins, ride-shared, bought refillable water bottles and returned the LED wristbands after the show." That's one of the things you might want to highlight. It's unnecessary.
I'll come back to that.
Don't think we need LED wristbands. Anyway. "And just by coming," they went on, "you have had a tree planted and helped a range of environmental organisations like the Ocean Cleanup and Client Earth, a team of lawyers who defend the environment. Thank you all, and hopefully this time next year we will have made big improvements."
That other 3%, is that what he's talking about there? Are we going to get it up?
Yeah.
Or is he going to break 50%? I say he, they. Is this Chris Martin speaking or the band? It's the band, isn't it? They
the band
are saying all of this. Very nice of them to thank me and you. I mean, we did the really, really valuable thing in terms of the carbon impact of this tour by just not going, which is yeah, definitely a way that you can have a positive impact on the world.
I feel good about that.
But for the people who did go, all those trees have been planted, and some of them made the effort by riding those bikes and jumping up and down on the kinetic dance floor, etc., etc. So, although, you know, despite our seeming cynicism here, we're not actually cynical about this. We actually think this is good stuff. And okay, they didn't quite make the 50%, but they got quite close. They've done more work since the year that these stats relate to. So some good stuff has clearly been happening. But the key question is, what does Professor John E. Fernandez of MIT Environmental Solutions Initiative think about all of this? That's what we really care about. And he says, based on a detailed review of the work of Coldplay's sustainability team in assessing and advising the band and management of the CO2 impact of touring. We fully endorse this effort as critically important, scientifically rigorous, and of the highest quality. MIT ESI, that's Environmental Solutions Initiative, remember, endorses this work as an important and substantive step towards a new era of eventually achieving carbon-neutral music events by major artists. The band deserves significant praise in commissioning the work and acting as the vanguard for the global music industry as it begins to take seriously the reality of living and making music in the Anthropocene. And if you don't know what that word means, Andy Malt will now tell you.
It's the current geological age, the period during which human activity has been the dominant influence on climate and the environment. So, just now.
Yeah.
Right, yeah.
Right now.
In addition to all this, last week there was a lot of talk about Chris Martin arriving in Cardiff for the band's two shows there by train, which was hailed as another positive move. Although, I mean, possibly notable that the rest of the band and their crew were not with him on that train. And there's also been criticism of Coldplay's reliance on private jets in the past. I don't know how much they have addressed that, and it certainly was not mentioned in their post on all of their environmental efforts. But, you know, Chris Martin got a train, so that's just great. That's probably got the 3% there. I mean, another possible area for criticism, although it's one they highlighted as a good thing, are those wristbands that were mentioned. So they hand out these LED wristbands to everyone in the audience, and then that forms part of the light show for the show. And they've done that for a number of years. Although on this tour, they're asking people to return them after the show's finished, and they say that 86% of them do get returned, which I think that's a pretty good rate. You'd think more people would be taking them as a souvenir. And they also talk up the plant-based materials used to make those wristbands, although obviously that doesn't extend to the electronics within them, and that means that, I mean, there's tens of thousands of small batteries in those wristbands, and I think there are questions about how these and the other electronic elements of those wristbands are going to be disposed of when they're no longer required. Still, I mean, as we said, those seem like niggles, but I don't know. Could you get 3% back by getting rid of those wristbands? Would it affect the show? I don't know. But it is good. I mean, as John E. Fernandez said in his statement, for a band of Coldplay size to be doing work like this and assessing the environmental impact of their shows and sharing what they learn with the wider industry, that can only be a good thing. And it's work that will hopefully inform how other artists attempt to reduce the impact of their tours in the future. It's not going to be perfect, but I think it is important for it to be happening. And yeah, well done, Coldplay.
Well done, Coldplay. We may even forgive you for the lasers and the LED wristbands for this good work that you've been doing. And yeah. As we say, anybody in the live industry, it's definitely interesting seeing what they're doing, what's working, what's not working. You can go and check out a load more stats than the ones we've shared here today and some other information on all of that activity on Coldplay's website. And we will put a link to where you can do that in the show notes.
And finally, on this edition of Setlist, Apple last week unveiled its long-anticipated mixed reality headset, the Vision Pro, which is the company's big play in virtual and augmented reality. Or, if you prefer what Apple themselves said about it, it's a revolutionary spatial computer that seamlessly blends digital content with the physical world while allowing users to stay present and connected to others. The headset was unveiled last week at Apple's Worldwide Developers Conference and was closely watched by those actively involved or particularly interested in VR and AR, given the potential for Apple to impact more widely on the evolution of that technology in the same way it did for personal computers, smartphones, and tablets.
Yeah, of course, there have been many times over the years where virtual reality and or augmented reality has been bigged up as the next big thing. And then more recently, there was all the talk around the metaverse. And in a way, this is all connected to that as well. Although it has to be said, in the main, although the technology obviously has been slowly developing and getting more sophisticated and more impressive over the years, it's never felt to me that any of this is quite as impressive as what I was promised in the early 90s when they were first pitching virtual reality in my lifetime. Anyway, but it has to be said that there has been a chunk of positive feedback around the launch. Various journalists and analysts and consultants have been testing this new Vision Pro. It's not actually on sale yet. It's going to come next year, I think, but they have allowed a few people to have a go. And those people are saying pretty positive stuff that potentially this product from Apple, which is competing with some existing products already on the market, one in particular by Meta, so the owner of Facebook and Instagram, but they are saying that in the same way that the iPhone was quite revolutionary in terms of moving mobile phone technologies forward, that potentially it does look like Apple are making some big moves here that could definitely move the whole VR thing, the AR thing forward.
Yeah, there definitely was a lot of positive reaction to this, although some have questioned what the actual point of this thing is.
When you say some, do you mean Andy Malt?
No, I'm going on things I've read.
Who are the people being down on Apple's innovations here?
The Verge?
The Verge.
Yeah.
Okay, we'll blame The Verge.
They were positive about it, but said, what actually is it for?
Yes.
That's what people said about iPads, though.
Yeah, because it did feel that for a time that who would need a tablet when you've got a phone and a laptop? And it turned out we all needed a tablet. So maybe.
Yeah.
But yeah, I guess even if you're not being super cynical, it's still a valid question, which is, okay, this new technology is coming down the line, competing with some existing technology that's already doing this stuff. What the hell is it going to be used for?
Gaming is an obvious priority for anyone working with this sort of technology. Although, as I mean, maybe you would expect, but Apple really pushed the use of the technology in the workplace and its business uses. Although, as well as that, it did seem very keen to stress how the headset will impact on the wider world of home entertainment as well, saying, with two ultra-high resolution displays, Apple Vision Pro can transform any space into a personal movie theatre with a screen that fills 100 feet wide and an advanced spatial audio system. But are people really going to sit at their desk all day, every day, with this on their head and then go home and watch movies on it? And also, I mean, they've talked up about how it's designed so that if you're talking to someone in the real world, you'll be able to see them and it sort of shows your eyes on the front of the thing. So, it's supposed to feel like you're just having a normal conversation, but I don't think anyone's going to be able to get past the fact that you've got a massive thing on your face. And also, it's all well and good saying, yeah, you'll be able to feel like you're in a movie theater with a massive screen, but like, if you're watching the movie on your own, fine, but if you're like, with other people, is that not a bit weird? Is that going to work?
It does sound a little bit like it is Andy Malt who's questioning whether or not we'd need these devices. But
I said some people. I might be one of them.
You're going to blame this on The Verge as well. But while we are also putting, you know, some negatives down here, even if you think this is really exciting, whether that's because you're a gamer and you recognize what this could mean in terms of making the gaming experience ever more immersive and exciting, or maybe you do recognize the business opportunities and how it could help in the workplace, and maybe you want that big movie experience with or without people that you live with and know. But however excited you are, we should stress that when these go on sale next year, they're going to cost $3,500 each, which doesn't make it the most accessible of devices. Now, of course, Apple has never really sought to compete on price when innovating in the hardware space. I think there's that video that does around every so often, doesn't there, that when they launched the iPhone, the then boss of Microsoft was saying, but look at the price point. No one will ever spend that much money on a smartphone. And of course, he turned out to be very wrong on that. So it's not a surprise that Apple are coming into this market with a relatively expensively priced product. And that doesn't necessarily mean that it's only ever going to be a niche interest product that a relatively small part of the population buy. Although in its coverage of the launch, the Financial Times did say that that price point was even higher than most analysts had expected. And they pointed out that it's nearly 12 times the price of the Quest 2, which is the competing product I mentioned that is sold by Meta, and which is currently the biggest selling VR headset. But in his official statement around all of this, Apple boss Tim Cook was keen to stress that this was just the start, and maybe that means that not only will the technology get ever more sophisticated in the future, but presumably there will be some versions that are somewhat more affordable than $3,500. And in his statement, he was very keen for everyone in the room to know that today, which is the day when they launched it at their conference, today marks the beginning of a new era for computing.
Yeah, that's a bold statement. He went on, just as the Mac introduced us to personal computing and iPhone introduced us to mobile computing, Apple Vision Pro introduces us to spatial computing. Built upon decades of Apple innovation, Vision Pro is years ahead and unlike anything created before, with a revolutionary new input system and thousands of groundbreaking innovations. It unlocks incredible experiences for our users and exciting new opportunities for our developers.
And who doesn't want incredible experiences for users and exciting opportunities for developers? So thank you, Apple. Thank you, Tim. But this is Setlist. It's a music business podcast. So I guess we should ask the question, what the fuck does this mean for music? And, well, who knows? Obviously, music is generally an important part of the gaming experience, and as the gaming experience evolves, that will have an impact on those people who are making or licensing music into that sector. Same is true, I guess, if the movie experience becomes more immersive, etc., etc., then the people involved in creating music for movies. But what about artists who are releasing music and building audiences around their tracks? Does it impact on them? You may remember that a few years ago, I think in the brief slot between everyone being obsessed by blockchain and then everyone being obsessed by NFTs, which is really just a part of the blockchain, in the middle there, everyone got very excited about VR again within the music industry, and there were various people dabbling with doing live shows with some sort of VR element, whether that is VR actually in the live space where you put a headset on at a live show, or it's bringing live shows into the living room. And various people were dabbling with that. It didn't really come to a great deal, it has to be said. Maybe it was too soon because people didn't really have the headsets or the technology. Maybe there's something in the music space down the line. But I think in the short term, bearing in mind, presumably it's going to take quite a long time for anybody to be getting this particular headset, given the price point, I do think in the short term for the music industry, it is more relevant to those people who are making music, licensing music in the gaming space and possibly the movie space. But maybe it will have an impact on the music industry down the line. I can see, particularly once these devices are out there and assuming that Apple's competitors start to ramp up the abilities of their competing devices, I can see at some point in the next year or so, maybe metaverse and VR, which has slightly fallen down the agenda when it comes to music industry talking points, may rise up again on that agenda. And who knows, it might stop people banging on endlessly about AI, which would be a good thing, wouldn't it? would you take more VR chatter if it meant less AI chatter? I don't know. Seems like a good exchange to me.
I don't know.
Who knows? But I think it is definitely too soon to tell what impact this may have on the music industry and on things like metaverse and stuff like that. But nevertheless, definitely something to watch next year when it gets on sale and how it starts to be used, who's buying it, how widely it's bought, what impact it has on home entertainment and potentially on the music experience as well. So lots to look for in the future. Although if you insist on something super music specific, in amongst all of the other announcements that were made by Apple at its Worldwide Developers Conference, there were a few things specifically about Apple Music, although, I mean, not much really, was there? But there was two or three things.
No, there were some changes to Apple Music that were promised as part of the rollout of Apple's next mobile operating system, iOS 17. It said in a statement, Apple Music introduces collaborative playlists that make listening to music with friends easier than ever before. Imagine that, collaborative playlists. Who could ever imagine such a thing? And also SharePlay in the car will allow all passengers to easily contribute to what's playing. Listeners can control the music from their own devices, even if they don't have an Apple Music subscription.
Is that a good thing, that anybody in the car can now add tracks to the playlist that you're listening to? I can't help thinking that's going to cause more arguments than enhancing the in-car listening experience.
Well, if you don't like it, you can just stick your VR headset.
That's true, and pretend you're in space and have some sort of, spatial, immersive listening experience if you've got $3,500 to spare. So, lots of Apple announcements this week. Most of them not completely relevant to the music industry. Well, certainly the exciting ones were not completely relevant to the music industry. But nevertheless, I think it is worth keeping an eye on what happens when the Vision Pro comes out next year and the impact it has on the wider VR AR space. Maybe that experience I was promised so long ago, where basically virtual reality feels exactly like reality. Some of the people who were reviewing it were saying that it does. I'm not convinced, but I know. We'll see, I guess. Something to watch. Whether or not we'll be having to do podcasts in some sort of VR immersive way in a year's time, I mean, let's hope not. I mean, we're struggling to put together our weekly podcast when we just sit down in a corner of a room with a very basic audio device. But maybe this time next year, Setlist will be in 3D.
Maybe. Do you know what I want to see? And I think this could be a reality, is the return of Craig Charles's virtual reality game show that was on in the 90s. That's what I want to see come back. I can't remember what that was called, but I would watch that again. So maybe that's the one thing that can come out of all of this, is Craig Charles gets back on the telly.
Maybe we'll look out for that next year. Who knows? I know we won't.
No, we won't. But that's all we've got time for on this edition of Setlist. If you want to read more about anything we've discussed here, go and check out the show notes. Those are in your podcast player at the moment, or you can find them at setlistpodcast.com. Don't forget to subscribe to the show to receive new episodes every week, or at least when they come out. Don't forget to rate and review the show. And if you want to talk to us about anything, you can email us, setlist@unlimitedmedia.co.uk. Setlist is the music business podcast from CMU. It's presented by Andy Malt and Chris Cook. And for more on CMU, go to completemusicupdate.com.